Welcome, folks, to the Slowpokes podcast. As always, I am Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
We are here today to talk about a game John put on the list, Metro 2033 by 4A Games.
Yeah, I'm so glad we get to come together and talk about something I love and just how much we both enjoyed it and how much we both got out of it and what a rewarding experience that we both had.
Yeah, absolutely.
Playing this game.
I think it's probably best we start with our expectations and whether or not they were met. So, John, I mean, you played this game right back when it started,
when it came out. I played this game pretty much when it came out. So I've always been a fan of what I call that Russian bleak post-apocalyptic genre of games, all pretty much made out of Ukraine or something along those lines.
Crimea.
Yeah, you know, those kind of places.
Chechnya.
Yeah. I was a big fan of Stalker. So in these kind of Russian games have this bleakness, and it's like 90s grunge seen through the East kind of thing. And so when I heard about Metro 2033, I was like, oh, awesome, I'll check this out. It sounds like a game I'd like because it's set in this post-apocalyptic world. It's written by Russians who I think get a lot of the bleak of post-apocalyptia really well. And then when I played it, it was amazing. For me, it hits every note. I don't mean to just go on, but I will go on for hours. It hits a lot of the things I look for in a post-apocalypse kind of setting. It has a interesting gimmick, like the Fallout games, for example, have that weird 50s aesthetic, but it's 2050s and then the apocalypse happened. Whereas this is all set in the Russian metro system, and there's something about that grounding, that kind of semi-realism of people living in the train stations, which is pretty much the only bunker system that you can do to survive the nuclear fallout, which will create the world, that gets me really excited. And then it tells a linear story, which is good because Stalker was so vague that I think it scared a lot of people, but this, it just carries you straight through. So David, what did you think about Moscow 2033? Metro 2033. God. Scratch off your bingo card. John forgot the name of the game.
John forgot the name of the game that he suggested.
Yes. Right. Well, that one happens more than once. It's a really rare bingo spot. So, David, what did you think of the game?
So, I really liked it, actually. This is the first time I got into it this week. You know, I've never really got into it before. And obviously, heaps of people have been recommending it for a really, really long time.
Me specifically.
It's got a lot of, like, positive energy behind it. And I'm a huge, huge fan of the writer. I'm Lin-Manuel Miranda. I was a huge fan of his before this. But this is, like, his magnum opus. And you know what? I've just realized I'm talking about the Hamilton soundtrack. Metro 2033 was garbage, John. It is the worst thing I've done in a long time.
Incorrect.
I saw Ready Player One this week, and that was not the worst thing I did this week because I played this game. John, I love you. I really do. Yep. You're one of my best friends. You're one of my oldest friends. Why'd you make me do this? I don't get it.
David, I don't understand. You're making me feel so betrayed right now. I gave you a precious snow jam, just this little tiny ice crystal of pure joy, and you're just shitting all over it here. You're turning this podcast into a fight cast, David.
Look, I don't want to fight.
Yep.
But straight, I got to come clean to the listeners here. I did not finish this game. I got up to a point where I was very frustrated, and I was playing the game, and I realized I'm about to have a tantrum at a video game. I am so frustrated by this experience, and there is nothing redeeming about it, that I am about to actually start shouting and screaming like a child.
Okay.
So I need to be a fucking adult. I need to be a fucking adult and turn this off and go and do something else. And when I made that decision, I tried to go back one more time after that and had the same reaction. And I was just like, you know what? This game is not going to get finished by David for this podcast because I am not going to be that dude. I am not going to be the 28-year-old man who throws a fucking crying gamer tantrum because of a video game.
It's not a good look, really. No.
Yeah, it's bad. And also, I was surrounded by very expensive things and I didn't want any of them to break.
Yeah, and also, while we try and give games a fair shake, if you truly did not enjoy this experience, which blows my mind, I don't understand how anyone could not enjoy this game, but it's fine to not finish it.
Yes.
No one should torture themselves with video games.
And this is the thing, because like, there was a big part of my brain that was like, maybe I should try and just get through it for the show. But then I thought about what you would tell me to do.
Yes.
And you would say, David, if you're about to throw a pissy little gamer tantrum because you're having a bad time, take some emotional responsibility for yourself and check in and manage that.
Yep.
and don't blame outside forces for the fact that you're miserable.
Yeah, especially
take control
games.
Of your life.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. I would say that. However, in this one instance, I have to disagree with you.
In this one instance, you still are unambiguously wrong and I feel betrayed.
Yeah, and I don't even need to hear why. In fact, we're going to end the podcast now. David is wrong. Everyone should play this game. It's the best game in the world.
So, okay, we're going to take a step back from the joke here. There were things I did like about the game, but it didn't click, and I know you, and I know your tastes, and a lot of the stuff you recommend is amazing. You have good taste, and I need to know why in this situation the taste receptors of your brain have been so thoroughly fooled.
Fooled. I gotta stop myself from being, what's that thing where we work together, cooperative? Because you're like dunking on me, and I'm just like trying to line up shots for you. And I know, in this case, I will not.
No, I refuse to be the punching bag.
I need to listen and find out what you were expecting from this game and why you're so wrong.
Okay, so I was expecting basically what you would think you would get on the tin.
Yes.
A post-apocalyptic, kind of grimy Russian game in the metro. Things are bleak. Things are dark. Yep. It's all about overcoming shit. I wasn't expecting a super high quality gameplay experience, right? I wasn't going into this expecting, you know, AAA shooter du jour. Yep. I was expecting a mid-budget, a little bit clunky, but still pretty much serviceable game. And I kind of hate myself for saying these words.
Okay.
That core gameplay loop, that core shooting loop, was bad.
Oh boy.
That, when that's the one thing that you're consistently doing in a shooter like this, which is so much a shooter, like I was expecting something a little bit more narratively focused, a little bit more like RPG, not so much like RPG instead of mechanics, but that kind of thing where there's a lot more conversation and there's a lot more like interaction with other characters. But this is a linear level-based tunnel shooter. You are going through tunnels, you're shooting things, you have a tiny little bit of narrative, and then more shooting. And so the shooting was so much more prevalent than I imagined, and so much less satisfactory than I imagined.
Interesting.
And that I think is the biggest part of my frustration. We talk a lot about this idea that you presented, the line between a game and an old game.
Yeah.
And for me, this is so much on the far side of it. Because it's clearly taking a lot of inspiration from Half-Life, but also Half-Life feels more modern than this game does. It's just, it's so in that element of it.
It's so weird that you say that, because I was thinking, as I was writing the rundown and thinking about this game today for the show, I was like going, this is probably one of my favorite shooters of all time. I would rank it pretty high. I have such a genuine
maybe
experience.
We should start there with gameplay then? Like, dive into that?
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you couple of my problems with it. Yep. And I want you, like, legit, I want you to tell me why I'm wrong. Because I need to understand how your brain works in this situation. So, one of my big problems.
Yep.
Shooting humans is okay. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a functional enough. That's about as functional as I thought it would be. Whenever the mutants show up. So, maybe we should paint that picture as well.
Do you want me to just do a brief rundown of the world of Metro 2033?
A brief kind of premise.
Yeah. I actually ran a role-playing, the only role-playing game I would call successful. I ran in the Metro 2033 universe. Thinking about this, I kind of want to run another one. Because basically, the world is the series of metro stations. Each station is a little community set in this far-flung post-apocalyptic future where the nukes went off one day and everyone basically ran into the train stations to survive.
Yeah.
And because of all the radiation and everything, creatures have mutated. You know, the thing doesn't really happen in real life because mutations in real life are sad. But in video games and other things, they become these fantastical giant monsters.
Think of the mutants in I Am Legend, except significantly more vampire looking.
Yeah.
They're like actually looking like furry bat creatures.
Yeah. If you crossed a bat with a wolf and like half a bear, right? They're like quite large and gangly and they run around the place.
And there's millions of them.
Yeah. Has a kind of vampire vibe to it, actually.
Yeah, they call them the Dark Ones, and, you know, they've got names all in that sort of genre of creepy dark thing.
Yeah, and not only are there those, they're kind of hints at these other-y kind of figures that are behind them, that direct them. The game kind of shows and hints at them, and that's kind of what you're there fighting against. You're trying to stop the Dark Ones, who are these weird things that kind of control and talk to the other lower mutants and stuff.
So that's the basic world, which, like I said, that sounds cool. The fact that everybody's living underground in the subway stations because all of this shit happened all at once, and that was the closest thing people had to bunkers that was actually going to outlast it and that kind of thing.
And that was accessible for everybody. body to get into.
Yeah, yeah, and this is just the last gasp of humanity as it tries to cling on to life. And you know that even though this part of the world is so specific and so contained, it's so obviously specific to Moscow, because that's where the subway is, you have this sense that there probably are other metro communities in the London Underground and in the New York subway and all that kind of thing. Just but by obviously, the, you can. There's no way in hell you'd ever be able to make contact with them.
By the nature of how humans have survived in Moscow, it just leads to you thinking about everywhere else. Mm. And you don't know, because communication is cut off almost immediately after the bombs fall.
And this is the thing I want to clarify here. That's all very cool, but this is stuff that you hear the premise and this is what you think. On paper, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit about why I don't think that narrative really connected with me in the game, but we were setting that up to talk about some of the basic shooting
the monsters. Yeah.
So the monsters that come at you, you've got your standard big wolf-sized ones. You've got your ones that are sort of a bit more like the size of a kind of a large cat, and they're really quick and they duck out of holes and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All of them move so fucking fast and take so many bullets.
Yeah.
And in most of the sections, especially with those tiny little cat ones that can duck into tunnels and pop out, every fight felt 50% longer than it should be. All of your guns as well, I feel, are... Part of me wants to like this, because again, on paper, it sounds very cool. None of your guns are very accurate. The most accurate, serviceable weapon is the AK-47, right?
Sure. I mean, there are actually more sniper rifle style weapons.
Yeah, I'm talking about as a serviceable weapon in this scenario where you're getting mobbed by beasts. So you've got your sniper rifles. Those are pretty accurate, but obviously single shot and all that kind of thing. So the AK is the most accurate defensive weapon that you kind of have.
Sure.
And it is ludicrously inaccurate.
Yeah.
Even by the real life standards of that firearm.
I mean, you're totally right, but most of these fights take place in tiny corridors where the walls are barely further than your light. And so you have a whole range of shotgun-based weapons too, and pistols. So I get that you're saying the guns aren't that accurate, but it's not like you're shooting down a hallway most of the time. The combat is really close, especially in those monster encounters, which is one of the weaker elements of the game. To be clear, every monster section pretty much is a wave survival section.
Yeah.
And there's an end point to it, but you don't know when it's coming. And so it can always feel like it's dragging on.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
What was your sort of like go-to loadout weapon-wise?
Okay, so for me, the interesting thing about Metro 2033 is its inclusion of stealth in the combat. So a lot of my loadout was basically just to fight mutants, because I stealth the whole game.
Okay. Yeah,
which may be the counter problem, because it sounds like you shot a lot of things.
Yeah.
So my loadout was basically built towards the things that caused me the most problems, which were the monsters. And that usually consisted of the vaguely semi-automatic shotgun with a weird revolver barrel
thing.
Which it feels so satisfying.
I will say, again, some of the stuff I really like about the game is minute, almost images.
Well, like world building.
Yeah,
kind
so
of
like
thing.
So you've got this shotgun that's got a revolver thing on it, but you pop the shells into the exterior of these little revolver thing. It's very hard to describe, but it looks very cool.
Half of the weapons are all cobbled together in blacksmith's underground in the Moscow.
Yeah, and you can really feel that more so than any other weapon, I'd say, in that shotgun. You can really feel that.
Also, all the weapons have different things. So even if you see someone using an AK, for example, you might have a look because it might have a scope on it or something like that. Or all the weapons have like customizable parts to them. So for me, it was usually a shotgun, some sort of submachine gun type weapon, or an AK to do a bit more room spraying. And then one of my favorite styles of weapons, the game has air compressed weapons.
Yeah, these are kind of cool as well.
And I like how all the weapons feel kind of cobbled together apart from the military ones, and none more so than the air compressed BB, like the metal BB sniper thing.
And I forget what it's called. It's some Russian word, but it's basically a super soaker that shoots ball bearings. And so to reload it, you not only have to load in a canister of ball bearings, but you also have to pump the pneumatic chamber to pressurize it so that it can fire. And so you almost have two ammo magazines that you have to manage simultaneously, but it's a really powerful weapon.
Yeah, and the air pressure leaves the cylinder even when you're not using it, so you have to pump it every so often to keep it charged. And also, the throwing knives.
Yes, the throwing knives were very fun to use.
Yeah, and they're so satisfying. And honestly, I would say 10 out of 10 best throwing knives in a video game.
I would not say best, but the fact that throwing knives are so fun to use kind of almost leads into one of my other frustrations with the game, is that it gives you a lot of weapons with stealth elements to it, with silencers, the pneumatic guns are silent, the throwing knives are silent, but it felt to me that only about a quarter of the enemies could feasibly be taken out silently. If people are wearing gas masks, that blocks a bullet, even on the easiest difficulty, which is what I was playing on. I tried dropping it down to keep going.
And that's not a bad thing. Yeah. That's something everyone should do if they're struggling.
I'm saying that, like, that's part of the fair shake I gave this game. Yeah. It isn't like I was playing it on normal and said, oh, this game is too hard and I'm not a baby.
Yeah, yeah.
But even on the easiest difficulty setting, I spent every gold bullet I had on this very expensive sniper rifle.
Yep.
And I shot a guy in the head. Ping. Just bounced off his gas mask. And he went, oh no, and put on another gas mask. And then everybody shot me. Some weapons, like the overcharged pneumatic one we were talking about before, that can hit someone even with a mask. But the throwing knives, which is so much fun and so awesome to use, there were plenty of guys who were wearing Kevlar. And so if you throw it at them, it goes pink and bounces off, and then everybody knows where you are. I really like the look of a lot of the characters because they're in that very heavy military kit and it just feels very survivalist. But it does often make it hard to tell if someone's wearing armor or if they're just carrying around a bunch of canteens and shit.
See, my counterpoint to that is that I felt like the game was telegraphing to you very clearly when someone was armored and when someone wasn't, so you would change up what kind of weapons you'd use. So if you'd see a guy with a really bulky helmet, well, you'd try to get close to him with a throwing knife. Because there's still ways to one-shot people, for example, even when they're wearing armor, like neck shots and other things like that.
Yeah, see, I wasn't 100% sure on the neck shots. I think I got one neck shot, but I wasn't sure if the guy actually died.
Yeah. And so when I was going through the game and playing through the stealth sections, the game almost was like, oh, it's a stealth shooter. When you make a mistake, you've got to shoot some dudes to clear it up. And this is one of those games where I actually played on higher difficulties after completing it on the regular difficulties, because it mixes up things like how much ammo you get and how much money you can get to trade and things like that.
Yeah.
And that I found to be a gradient of challenge that was rewarding. Because most times when you play a video game and there's a difficulty slider, it's like, oh, this enemy takes more hits.
Yeah.
And that's usually all it does.
Mm.
But this played around with how much ammo you'd find and how much you'd have to scavenge and encourage you to do so and pushed you into that stealth mindset. And maybe that's the difference, that this is like a sometimes stealth game. You know, the character has a watch which tells you the light levels, which to me clearly telegraphs when you're in darkness and when you're not.
So that watch, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I just missed the tutorial.
Yep.
That was never explained. I looked it up afterwards. I was just thinking about the game after I'd given up playing it. Things like, well, what were those lights about even? And I Googled it and they were like, oh, that's your visibility level. Ooh. I didn't feel like the watch was totally necessary because it's pretty clear when you're in light and shadow just based on the contrast. The lighting in this game, I will say, I actually think works pretty well. But little things like that, like the watch or the fact that filters in your gas mask don't consistently provide the same amount of time, that's never actually really explained quite well. And so I was getting to points where I put in a gas mask filter and it would last about 45 seconds. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? Mm. But it's just that I had a shitty filter.
And I think that maybe these problems are onboarding issues. If you're already invested in this kind of post-apocalyptic world that Metro 2033 is set in, you might already have assumed those things, like I did, because I can't recall the light system being explained to me, but I got it instantly and I knew that it was tied to that because I would use it throughout the whole game. I'd always be checking my watch to see what the light meter is. And also, I don't think someone did explain that gas canisters might have different amounts. But after that happened, I immediately was like, oh, okay, I have to collect as many as I can because I don't know how long they are. And you have to swap them out infrequently.
Yeah. And see, I really like a lot of the little attempts to build that atmosphere. So the way the gas masks need to be used at all, I think is very cool. That sometimes you just got to pull one on. And when you're moving around the world, you have a timer on your watch that shows how much gas mask you have left. And pressing the button to take your hand off the weapon so you can actually look at the watch.
Yep.
And that comes into focus. And then you've got the depth of field out of focus stuff behind everything else. That felt very cool and very militaristic. And I love that clicking timer.
Yeah. Also, can we just talk about how fantastic the sound and feel of wearing the gas mask is?
Yeah, like they put a lot of work into that.
I know that you've obviously got some problems with the gameplay and how, A, it's not clear, which I feel like these games never are. And that's a problem. A game should instruct you on how it works mechanically. I would even rather a game be contrived. oh, look at your watch to tell you if you're in cover and no one can see you.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous in the real world, but in a video game, someone needs to tell you.
If you understand it, it makes life a little bit less frustrating, I'll say.
And it can't appear in a in-loading screen tooltip. That does not
No, that's cheating, especially since if you play a game on an SSD, you don't see them.
Yes. You don't see loading screens anymore. Loading screens are a thing that flash by, like subliminal messages.
Loading screens are a thing that poor people have.
That's terrible. Also mostly true. One of the things I fell in love with this game is the feel of the world.
Mm.
Is traveling through these tunnels in Metro 2033, it feels claustrophobic. The way the lighting effects bounce around and you've got your headlight, you have to constantly charge
the portable charger. Yeah.
And it has such a visceral sound to when you charge
that
it.
That dynamo spinning up. Yeah.
So clear. And then there's all the other weirder elements to this broken, irradiated place where whole people have been wiped out of train stations, but parts of them remain. And there's a whole bunch of sections in the game where you have weird dream visions and flashbacks and ghosts just appear pretty much. And I adored every depressing moment of that. It was so visceral, this feeling of being there in the tunnels. You could almost feel the grime.
So there's two elements to this. One, I think you can really feel the very genuine attempt that lands sometimes and doesn't land as well others, but it's never really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that tactile sense of being in the tunnels. Like you were saying, when you charge that headlight, I really love that, that you have a battery-powered light and you have to charge it up by pulling out your little hand generator and generating it. You get that sound. I love the gas mask. That way that it sounds when your filter starts to run low, your breathing becomes raspier and there's more and more condensation on the inside of the mask.
I struggle to breathe when I play those sections because my breathing becomes as ragged and it mirrors the characters because I find myself getting so engrossed.
I really like as well that your gas mask can become damaged.
Yes.
And so you start to see cracks in the glass when it's on your face, and then you not only have to find new filters, you actually have to get a new gas mask as well that clears up the vision.
Or
I don't know if it actually reduces the effectiveness of the mask, but it feels like it does, and you really want a new one.
Also, sometimes you just gotta wipe perspiration off your gas mask too.
Oh, you can do that?
Oh, yeah. And see, this is another thing.
Yeah.
Does the game tell you? Maybe once.
Maybe. If it did, I missed it.
Yeah, right. But there's a button you press, and he takes it off, and he wipes it, and he puts it back on his face.
That's so cool. Yeah. I wish I knew that.
And I think this is where I'm coming from, this love of the game.
Mm.
I was, like, ready to get into it, and then it does all these things that I want shooters to do. Because my problem with shooters a lot of the time, you feel like an Unreal Tournament character in a war situation.
On that exact topic, one of the things I actually quite like is it's a lot of the little gameplay things that make you feel a little bit more like you're desperately surviving in this world.
Yeah.
When you kill a human character and you loot them, it isn't grab their gun and it comes with three packs of ammunition. They've got the ammo strapped to their chest or to their pack, and you actually have to press the grab button multiple times. Yeah. And it's not tedious, but it actually does really feel like you're picking this person clean.
And you genuinely have to look for things.
Yeah.
There's no shimmer on objects until you shine your flashlight onto them. Especially health packs are the ones that stand out to me because they're these orange things. You're always looking for them. You're always like, where are they? You want to flip bodies over and things like that. It gets you very engrossed.
Yeah, and one of the other things I really like about that is that you can kind of tell whether or not it's worth killing someone for their gear in advance, because you can see, oh, he's carrying two grenades. He's carrying a health pack.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's worth taking out.
Oh my God, I want his gun.
Yeah. And something else that you said before that I didn't really get a chance to engage with, the fact that some guns have a bayonet attachment, some guns have a scope attachment. You can't disassemble and reassemble these. You just have to find a gun that's set up the way you want it to be set up.
Yeah.
So it gives a relatively limited weapon pool, a lot more variety, without it being just, oh, attach a scope to everything in that really lame, crafty kind of way. Mm-hmm. I very much like that, that being capable of maintaining a weapon is a vital, highly regarded skill in this world. And it's not just, I'm a military guy, look at me, do all my gun stuff. This guy's not a gunsmith.
Yeah, he can't just change things. And for me, when I was playing it, I feel like the mods and attachments actually change how the weapons feel.
Mm.
Because, for example, the revolver you get at the start of the game is just a basic handgun. But then the second you add a stock to it, it becomes a super tight, very accurate pistol. And then when you put a scope and a silencer on it, it's basically just a silence pistol that fits in your pocket.
Yeah.
And that lets you carry other bigger, more scary guns as your mains when you have this tiny pocket pistol.
Mm. Yeah, one of my other annoyances is that it does have a limited inventory. So you've got melee weapons, a pistol slot, a main weapon slot, and then a special weapon slot. And in your special weapon slot will go your pneumatic weapons, your shotguns, and that kind of thing. And I think that that was frustrating as well, because I wanted to put a very strong silence weapon like the pneumatic rifle in there, but that meant I couldn't carry a shotgun.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of wished it was more like Halo, where you have two slots and any weapon can go in those two slots. I thought it was artificially constricting for me to not be able to carry a shotgun and one of these pneumatic rifles.
And I think any response I can give is just pointless, because I can understand why that would be frustrating. And because my particular loadout allowed me not to run into that problem very often, because pretty much I would have the combinations of weapons I enjoyed just weren't clashing, basically.
Yeah.
I'd always want to have a mid-range rifle weapon. And then halfway through, you find an assault rifle that's basically a silenced sniper rifle. And then I just use that as my middle gun for the rest of the game. So I didn't run into those problems.
It's one of those things where I don't want to say it's nitpicky, because it's not, but there are reasons why a developer might want to restrict the kind of weapons you can have out, and choosing between that pneumatic rifle and that shotgun, it might be very deliberate to get you to have to constantly swap your weapons out and make those golden bullets more valuable. We should talk about that, actually, for a quick second. So there are dirty rounds, which are the shitty ammunition that's been made since the fall of the world.
Yeah.
And then there's pre-apocalypse military-grade rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And these are so rare and so valuable, they're actually used as a currency in the world. And again, on paper, fuck me, that is so cool. That is such a good premise.
Money is bullets. Fantastic. You trade with them. You give them away to people who need them. People try and give them to you as rewards.
Mm.
But then you can also load your guns with them. They do way more damage.
Yeah. And so I never put military rounds in my gun, partly because I couldn't remember how to do it. I knew that you could, but I also was like,
I feel this problem that keeps coming into this game.
Yeah,
it's like,
it keeps coming up.
How do I do this?
So the thing that surprised me about the gold bullets, I was expecting it to be ammo and currency are very interchangeable. But the fact that they delineate it between dirty rounds and military rounds, it basically, to me, in the way I played it, just felt like, oh yeah, I have bullets and money.
Hmm.
They weren't quite as intrinsically tied. They do try to make you feel that they are. So when you go to a bullet
vendor,
they don't call it an ammo vendor. It's a currency exchange.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're exchanging super high value gold bullets for bullets that are also money, but less immediately spendable than the other bullets. So I like that. There's a lot of cool stuff thematically like that.
You can walk into a bullet exchange and be like, I don't have a shotgun. Take all my shotgun rounds. Give me match grade bullets.
And the fact that it's put together as
that currency exchange.
It's put together as like an economic service rather than, you know, a shop, I think is kind of cool. But a thing that I kept running into is I rarely had enough military rounds for me to feel like I could afford to put them in my guns. And that's a very hard thing to balance, I think. Part of the reason I had so few bullets is because I would go to a vendor and be like, oh, hey, I want to buy this gun because that seems cool. It seems like an upgrade to what I have. And I would go out and I would use the gun and go, oh, this does not behave at all like I expected it to behave.
Yeah.
I got a golden fucking sniper rifle with a huge ass scope and a silencer. Looks like the best sniper rifle in the game. Oh, I can't kill a guy with a headshot. I just spent all my fucking bullets on that, you know? And part of that is, like you say, you wouldn't run into that problem because you know what guns you like and you can go through and you can play it. I could have looked up a wiki and got a little bit of info about how these guns work before I spent the money on them, but it really did feel like I was wasting a lot of cash and I never really felt like I could chuck in those gold bullets for this big boss fight that I was about to have.
And see, for me, when I was playing, I kind of realized early on that you can find a lot of the guns you might want to try and use in the levels if you explore. And I explored every inch of this metro, right? I would go down every dead end. I would look in every corner. I would talk to every person, because you can talk to people as well. And there's not like a Mass Effect style dialogue tree, but you can engage with people and explore and talk. And so I found interesting weapons down these kind of holes. And I realized early on that you only kind of buy a gun if you kind of know you want it. That isn't telegraphed to you, because really you only spend your match grade bullets on armor and unlocks like that, because as you progress...
You can buy armor?
Yes, you can if you keep playing the game.
Okay, so I didn't get up to a point where I could buy armor.
You can, basically, the game goes, hey, do you want like a fully bulletproof, super bulletproof suit, or do you want a stealth suit?
That would have made my life a little bit easier.
Do you want, do you want a suit that helps you sneak, but it's made of paper? and I always go, paper suit, please. I think you even get night vision goggles and stuff like that.
Yeah,
too.
I got some night vision goggles. They were fun.
But I feel like the currency is kind of broken on easy and normal difficulty. Because on easy and normal difficulty, there is a lot of ammo going around.
Yeah.
Right. But when you take the game to hard or higher, and I don't, this isn't me going, oh, see, you just play on a hard difficulty. Mm. This is me going, they haven't balanced it perfectly.
Yeah. Like, I will concede, this is a very difficult thing to balance. Yeah. The idea that firing a weapon costs you money. On no other game does that.
And on that hard difficulty, and then the ranger difficulty, which just turns off all the hub and just for masochists, the choices comes up more frequently. And then sometimes it's just like, you're out of bullets. There's no bullets.
And you just have to shoot money. You just have to shoot money now.
Yeah. And it's just, oh, it's so interesting.
See, I almost wish that every bullet was money. I wish that rather than having to go to a currency... Rather than having to go to a currency exchange and then back to this guy, I could just choose what I wanted to buy it in with whatever kind of bullets, because that would feel more like that.
Yeah.
But like I said, for me and the way I played it, it felt very separate. On the exploration and finding the guns that you want, two problems I ran into with that. One was that the sniper rifle I was talking about, that I was really keen to try the whole game, plenty of dudes had that without the scope. But for whatever reason, I don't know if I had a bug or something like that, I couldn't pick it up. It was like a non-interactable part of the environment.
That's insane to me. I can't believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw maybe two or three guys drop it. And I was like, that looks like the kind of gun I would love. Semi-automatic, relative accuracy, better than this AK that I've been dragging around because it's the most accurate gun I've been able to find for that slot. This seems more my jam, but for whatever reason, I just couldn't pick it up off guys.
Never encountered that. I've never encountered that in the game. So that sounds really weird to me.
Yeah. So I have no idea why that would be. Second thing about exploration, there were a couple of times where I saw points where I was like, oh, hey, here's a cool little platforming thing where I've got to jump across these grates before they collapse, and there's a corpse at the end of it who's got a good gun. Problem is, at that point in the game, I'm being escorted by someone, and this was a recurring problem I had with the game that really curtailed my exploration, especially in the metro areas where you're actually in communities. The people you're escorting don't stop walking when you stop, most of the time.
Yeah.
Occasionally, they will stop at, like, doors and things before you get to them, but most of the time, they just keep walking and keep speaking, and if they get far enough away, you can't hear what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was like, look, I'm going to stick with this person and get the story, because the guns I've got are fine.
Yeah.
What I'm going to pick up off guys isn't going to be that much better. So I didn't really feel like I had as much room to explore. But again, for you, someone who's played the game multiple times.
Yeah, I don't know if it's I'm just ignoring them because I know exactly what they say a bazillion times. Or if I notice the points where they would stop and be like, go explore now and then come back to me to advance the game better. And I understood that more innately. Because I feel like a lot of the problems we're running into here is the game's not clear enough in communicating its details to you.
Yeah, and so one example that sticks out to me is the Polis station. So the first half of the game, your whole goal is get to Polis.
Yep.
Something's happened, you have to deliver a message to Polis.
Yep.
Everything that happens in between is just interruptions to you getting there. Then you get there, and it's this cool big station. You're coming in on a car, there's people everywhere, it's huge, it's bigger, and it's better maintained than any station you've been in. It almost looks like you could almost be comfortable living there rather than constantly dying of anxiety and dread.
Yeah.
You follow the guy who drops you off here to the armory where there's a bullet exchange, and he's like, we have to go speak to the council, come and talk to me when you're ready. And he stops and he stands at the door and he's holding the door halfway open. And every like 20 or 30 seconds, he's like, we need to speak to the council. And so I'm like, okay, cool. I'll talk to this guy, do the council thing, and then I'll get to explore the rest of the station. Nope. Cutscene happens. Bang, you're out in the fucking tunnels again. And I was like, why? It's just a lot of little things like that, that if maybe like a little bit more QA had been done, I would have had the opportunity to explore Polis like I wanted to.
This is what I call the made in Ukraine. Right? I love a lot of these games from Ukraine. I'm a fan of Men of War, which has the worst voice acting and almost feels like...
the worst name.
Worst name too. It feels like they got the American voice actors, which they have, and the Russian voice actors, which they have, and told them to do the opposite country.
Yes! Yeah. And this is true of this game as well a little bit. Every kid is clearly an American trying to do a Russian accent.
Yeah. It's just like all over the place. And that's one of the those things where it's like, you didn't QA this at all, did you? Right? Because, for example, I was worried about that frustration in Breath of the Wild, the game I've been playing recently. I was like, oh, I'm going to go save the princess. Why am I going to do other stuff? And then the game kind of goes, no, it's okay. Go explore. And it tells you that very clearly.
Yeah, and right? not only does it tell you, but literally every element of the environmental design encourages you to do it as well.
Whereas in this, the guy stands there holding a door open for you.
Yeah, and it's
right?
like giving what human, pressure. Yeah,
what human wouldn't go through that door? And of course, the problem is once you play the game a few times, you know, don't talk to him until I do this. And that is meta.
It's unreasonable to expect a new player to know that.
So I can't refute these things. And especially when you really enjoy something, these flaws you don't encounter because you understand them innately. I understand the people talk oddly and script is like it's been translated through a computer three times, backwards and forwards. I feel like the game hits the mark in my aspects between balancing the stealth and incentivizing it, building this wonderfully rich and detailed world, told a story very straightforwardly. At the time, a lot of games were doing the open world kind of thing, and this game was like, no, straight story.
Yeah, I appreciate that to some extent. We'll talk about where that falls down in a moment.
If you're not having fun, I can't tell anybody to keep pushing through it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the reward wouldn't be there for you, because I enjoy every second of it.
I think that if there was a game that I recommended to you for this show where I was concerned about the same thing, hey, play this game, but maybe you won't actually have fun while doing it, it was the original Mass Effect. But the thing with the original Mass Effect that has that this game doesn't is exceptionally good writing.
Because
I think we should probably start moving into narrative now. It's very obvious to me that this was adapted from a book.
Yep.
Because
it was.
It absolutely was. But I, even if I hadn't known that going in, I would have been able to pick it. Because there's clearly a lot of lore that isn't really well conveyed. And I struggle to explain how this works, but the example I always go to is Mad Max Fury Road.
Yep.
When you watch that movie, you know the world is so big and there's so much outside the frame
in
terms of that world building. In some ways, this game got that. Like I said, the grimy, in the moment, you're in the tunnels kind of thing. It did that well. But the whole, here are the Darkspawn, there are mutants everywhere, it felt a little bit flatter. And a really big moment for me with that was in the metro, there's a war between some communist stations and a Nazi grouping of stations. So basically, World War II, as the Russians perceived it at the time, right? Yeah. And when you go through that, it's almost like this throwaway thing. Oh, yeah, there are Nazis down here. Also communists. I guess I'll sneak across the lines. They're gone. And I feel like maybe, again, it's because of my political things. You can't just have Nazis in a game anymore. And maybe that's part of why I was overly sensitive to it. But it felt so hollow and two-dimensional, almost like a vague sketch of a community-spanning war that's going on between these two factions. It just wasn't really explored at all, other than in the most consistent way that the game does things, where it's like, things are miserable and sad. People are being conscripted to fight this miserable and sad war.
I think the problem with the adaptation from a book to a game is, in the book, it's about Artyom, who's the main character that you play. In the book, he is not a fighter. And he basically bumbles through, and he's always engaging with the people.
I imagine in the book he's also a character.
That's a good point as well. He has a voice.
He's a silent protagonist that you just play as.
Yeah. And adapting the book to a game, they have focused intently on that main plot and really used everything else as set dressing.
Yeah.
The main story is you have to deliver a message to Polis, and then you have to destroy the evil people. The evil mutated people.
Yeah. You have to kill the king vampire so all the other vampires stop being vampires.
Spoilers. there are other outcomes to this story.
Okay.
That are, like everything else in this game, very obtuse. There is a morality system built into the whole game.
Oh, okay.
So as you go through, I don't know if you ever noticed this, but occasionally you would do something good where you'd give money to an... I don't know about you, Daven, but sometimes I give money to the poor.
Yeah, I've made a character decision that my mission is too important.
Great. That means you get...
I need every gold bullet I have.
You get the standard ending. When I played, the game gives you a couple of really interesting things where you can just not accept rewards from people.
Mm.
Like, there's a moment later on where you clear out... It's a really big station. I think this is the one where those little mole rat things are in.
Yeah, and you save that kid.
Yeah, you clear out the station, you save this kid if you want. And when
you don't have to?
I think you might actually have to with the kid. I don't 100% remember now.
Because just a brief interruption. the kid doesn't want to walk, so yeah. he climbs up and hangs on your back. And I like that in that section, your movement of the camera is very sluggish and slow, and yeah. you're not able to run. It's just the right length for that to be interesting without being frustrating. Yeah. I thought it was a cool idea that now I have to fight with this kid, and it sucks,
yeah.
but I've got to protect this kid.
And I think the problem is, it's inconsistent. And that's one of the things I would claim is the flaws of this game. It's inconsistent. The monster sections can be too long and they can be badly telegraphed. Whereas sections like that are perfectly timed. You don't go, this is a terrible escort mission. You go, actually, this is pretty good. But there's that moment where you return the kid to his mother and she offers you money and you can just refuse it.
Oh, yeah, I took it. Yeah. I took the money.
And so when you do charitable things like, you know, not murder people who aren't Nazis.
I hope you don't lose points for killing Nazis.
You absolutely do not.
Yeah.
Basically, if you avoid killing civilians and the communists, which kind of shows leanings towards this game, the writer's political opinions, is like, killing communists is bad, killing Nazis, not bad. And I'm like, I do agree, but also
they
sleeve.
It's not the most romanticized version of the communists. They definitely conscript people, and yeah. they're definitely manipulating people into fighting.
Also, everybody in the world and the characters that you travel with are all like, oh, the communists, they're not as bad as the Nazis, but they're pretty rough. But when you do good things, the game flashes this white light, and there's some really positive sounds to it.
Yeah, I never did anything good, apparently.
And so when you do things like explore, listen to people's stories, play instruments, just engage with the world, you build good karma that can ultimately let you have a different ending.
Mm.
You can choose not to do that different ending as well,
yeah.
which is nice, but you only unlock it by engaging and learning about the world and yeah. understanding what the Dark Ones are.
Because one thing we haven't really talked about, and this is spoiler time.
Spoiler time.
So. Every now and then, Artyom gets visited by some kind of supernatural presence.
Yeah.
So it's like a super... I interpret it as some kind of super psychic mutant or whatever.
Those are actually the Dark Ones that everyone's talking about.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas you can very easily confuse that all the mutants are the Dark Ones, but there's actually
yeah.
this other force. That's the reason why everybody's...
Mm.
But that's why you're going on this journey. They're seen as a threat.
Yeah, and they're talking about them being Homo Novus or something. The yeah. next stage in human evolution or whatever. And they are vaguely controlling the mutants. The Dark Ones are vaguely controlling the mutants is what you understand.
Yeah, you have a couple of flashback moments where they're kind of psychic as well. And you get this feeling that they can control people and the world around them and
yeah.
the mutants.
And all of this stuff... I think was actually pretty well delivered. When you have these visions, they're very loud, for want of a better yeah. word. There's a lot of sound design in them that's really good. And I think that sound design is something that's actually kind of lacking from the rest of the game. There's very little non-diegetic music. The guns sound okay, but a lot of the other sounds in the environment are very crisp. And when I say crisp, harshly crisp, like wrong for the world. Whereas in these sequences, they do feel really big and really important because they've got a lot of sound and energy and lighting and stuff behind them. They felt very... well designed from a cinematography perspective.
I feel like the game is trying to play around with silence a lot, and all the sounds that you do hear, these diegetic sounds of guns clacking, of objects moving and things like that, they pierce the silence of the game. I feel that was a strong point for me, because the experience is very quiet, very silent, and I think the reason why these moments can be so loud is because the rest of the game is so quiet. And that it balances between the two well.
Yeah, yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that.
Because if the game had a rock and roll soundtrack the whole way through, it would totally ruin
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not talking like the Doom soundtrack.
Yeah.
But whenever you meet a character, so you start off meeting Hunter and yeah. then he disappears, and then you meet Bourbon and he gets killed, and then yeah. you meet Khan and he disappears, and yes. then you meet Alexander the Blacksmith and then he disappears. You're meeting all of these people one at a time, like one after another. And there's a lot of issues with, for me, that stop me engaging with them. Like, their characters aren't really well-performed yep. and well-written, so they're all very interchangeable. And part of that, I think, is racism, because they all sound very similar to me as well. They're obviously voiced by different people, but I guess the director was everybody needs to be stoic and mostly kind of mumbly. So you have these characters, and they kind of come in a chain and they kind of blend into each other. And there are different points where you're defending a station with a character. And for me, those moments kind of blend into each other as well, because I think that there needed to be something in there to make specific moments more memorable. Again, not the Doom soundtrack constantly playing the whole time, but in a moment like where Bourbon gets killed. Oh, he got shot and he fell down. Now he's dead. There was nothing really in that.
Yeah.
And I think that making some of those moments a little bit heavier with a little bit of music or with a little bit better staging or a little bit better voice acting would have helped me engage with the narrative a bit more.
I don't think this is a problem with just Metro 2033. Mm. I feel this is a thing that comes up with Russian literature and that way of storytelling where they don't dramatize things.
Yeah.
Because it happens so frequently how things just occur and like misery and pain just occur. And it's not dramatic. It just is. It's true. That could probably serve the narrative better in making these moments stand out. But I feel like it makes the moments of wonder and joy that you do encounter in this game, the moments when you go into shrines that people have made or just natural places that are kind of darkly beautiful and things like that, it helps raise them because they are the only points in the game where you see a sign of people living and things like that. Mm. And by having the rest of it as this bleakness, it allows those moments to rise up.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that is kind of true. There are points that are a little bit less unsafe, but I think that they would have been more enhanced by making the trudge through the tunnels feel a little bit more like a journey rather than a chore.
Yeah.
This is about contextualizing sort of my engagement with the game. Where I gave up was these creatures appear called librarians. And great premise, and I'm pretty sure this is long before the Doctor Who episode, but when you look at them, they pretty much stay still. They walk towards you slowly. When you look away, they rush you. And they're very, very dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
So awesome concept on paper. Hey, I can't look away from this thing. So in this section with these librarians, there are points where there's a blocked door and you have to figure out a way to clear the door without looking away from the guy, because if you turn away to look at the door, you're clearing it. So it's all very stressful. There are elements of it that work, elements that don't. And there are other points where you have to walk backwards across this room with holes in the floor. And so you can't see where you're walking and you'll fall down to the bottom level and have to walk all the way back up and do it again. And the sound design in this section, it's completely silent. No eerie, creepy music, no tension building stuff.
Yep.
All you can hear is the breathing of this monster and the sound it makes when it punches you.
You're saying that. I'm pantomiming going like, awesome. This is awesome.
But this is how they breathe. Okay, I'm going to make some noises into the microphone. I apologize if this is unpleasant, folks. But they breathe like this. Durr, 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 durr. And then they'll punch you and it goes, psh, 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 durr, durr.
You know you can kill those things, right?
I do now.
Yeah.
So what I'm talking about when I talk about sound design, part of it is the frustration of things like that. There are enemies. This is a puzzle that's kind of tedious to solve. But because there's no atmospheric work, at the very least in the way that I would consider it for a Western game, this doesn't actually feel terrifying or unsettling. There's one point where you go to loot a body and there's a crack in the wall and one of these things punches through the crack in the wall and grabs you and tries to drag you through, but you don't fit. So it just drops you and runs off. And it's supposed to be this big, like, oh, fuck, I'm dead. This thing's going to eat me. I'm screwed.
Yeah.
But it bashes you against the wall and chews up your health and then drops you. And that's scary if there had been any kind of acoustic work there. To me, it felt like, okay, I guess that's what that thing's face looks like. I'm on the ground now. Now I have no health.
I don't know how to describe this, but what you've said, when it happened to me, it works. It makes me feel scared. It makes me feel engaged. I'm shitting myself, right? I'm on the edge of my seat. When I first played through the game, I had to stop at that library section because it scared me so much because I was so afraid. And I hate saying this, but it just comes down to taste.
Yeah, I was going to say horror games often don't work on me. And I think it's because I become frustrated, stressed, rather than scared, stressed very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for a horror game to work, it's got to be doing a lot of the subtler stuff that a movie would do to really get me into it and get me emotionally in the right place. We're kind of getting a little bit distracted here from the narrative, though, because I didn't finish the plot.
Yeah.
I was curious enough by these supernatural sections, though, and I'm kind of disappointed that I didn't get to go to the end. You're telling me that there are different endings. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember when I first played this and I first got to the ending, because you're kind of wondering, oh, is this going to go to like a boss monster kind of thing? And there is a stage that's kind of boss monster-y near the end when you're trying to get the nukes online to nuke the Dark Ones, which is just like, guys, did you not learn anything?
In fairness, setting off a nuclear bomb after the nuclear apocalypse is a little bit less insane than setting one off before the nuclear apocalypse.
True, admittedly true. It's not like they're doing something for the third time. And so, do you want me to full spoil the ending? So, at the end of of the game, you've set up nuclear silos, basically, in a secret government-run part of the metro, and you've got the nukes all organized and ready, and you've got a range finder, and you need to go to the surface and just bomb the Dark One city. Because guess what? They've got a city on the surface. Mm. They have a massive population. And the whole time through the game, it's giving you these flashes where the Dark One is trying to talk to Artyom. And the reason why he's kind of special is his mind doesn't get burnt out when they talk to him.
Yeah.
Most people go mad. And it turns out that the Dark Ones aren't trying to terrify people. When Artyom was a kid, he opened a door which got them to come into the metro and started engaging with humans. But when they try and psychically talk to them, which is how they communicate, mm-hmm. they burn people's minds out, right? Yeah. And drive them mad. Except for him. So he can talk to them, and they're trying to talk to him and convince him about what's happening. And right at the end, you go in this fucked up dream sequence, which is all white walls and weird cubes, and it's just about the Dark Ones trying to explain what they are and what they're doing. And there's an option to kill them or to sort of stop them from dying. And you get to make that choice, but ultimately, you still kind of nuke them.
Okay.
Unless you've explored the metro and learned a lot about it and talked to everybody and really engaged and been nice.
Be a goody-goody. Yep.
Yeah, as good as you can. In which case, you can divert the nuclear disaster that's going to appall the Dark Ones. And it's kind of about, do you want to destroy this threat, but you're kind of repeating the past by just nuking something you don't understand?
Mm.
Or do you want to not be horrible bigots to psychic mind monsters and try and change the future of humanity? It's such a visual, distinct ending that wraps up the story and those kind of themes.
And obviously, I've not seen it.
But yeah.
Because, like I said, the supernatural sections where you're communicating with the Dark Ones are by far and away the most engaging part of the game for me because they're the only part of it that really has any energy and momentum, I feel, from the way I engage with it. I trust that the ending probably is pretty good from that perspective, and I would have liked to have seen it. It's just a shame I couldn't get up at that point.
Yeah, because games are gated via ability. Some games you just never experience the end of.
Yeah.
Unless you go look it up on YouTube, because the game is just going, nope, you can't have any more story until you do this puzzle. And you're like, but game, I find your puzzles terrible. And the game goes, don't care.
Yeah. See, I feel like the quote-unquote twist being that the Dark Ones aren't actually evil, I picked that 15 minutes into the game.
It's a
not-twist. That's not me dunking on it, though. I mean, a twist being predictable or a trope existing is not necessarily a bad thing. And the fact that you can kind of expect it, I think, means that you're not going to be like, oh, fuck this, fuck you and your bullshit twist. It doesn't feel like it comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they set it up well enough with them communicating with you. There's a lot of points where you can choose to run toward this menacing figure surrounded in burning blue light or turn around and run back into the tunnels and things like that in these dream sequences, which I quite like. It gives you that sense of, like, you're reacting to that, and Artyom, you can engage with fear or engage with curiosity. Like, the one that really sticks out to me is there's this huge gate in this dream sequence that's locking you in the tunnel. Then one of these silhouetted figures appears behind the gate in this huge blue light, and the gate explodes and tears back, and there's, like, this wind just pushing you back into the tunnel. And so it's so much easier to turn around and run back into the darkness, or you can fight against that and walk towards the light, which is presented quite menacingly and quite dangerously, but also somewhat benevolently. Like
the use of light, especially.
Because
they frame these dark, menacing figures in the white, blue, shining, pure lights.
And the noise, the sound of the wind, and the screams of these characters in the real world who are trying to talk you through this dream sequence, all of that stuff really works well. These little sequences are designed so, so well.
Yeah.
And it's just such a shame that when you're talking to Andrew the blacksmith, he's like, pick up a gun, go to the train, walk down the tunnel.
I think the companion that's the most overt in the message is Khan.
Yeah.
Because
he's the only one I really remember anything about.
He's named himself after Genghis Khan. And
that was something else I found a little bit grating. Everybody's either named after a famous general or some kind of alcohol.
Yeah. But he's like this weird kind of mysterious figure, whereas most of the people who explore and move through the metro are either smugglers or soldiers.
Yeah, they're hard asses. Yeah.
Stay together, don't touch anything, kill anything you don't see. He's kind of got this more naturalistic approach to moving through the metro.
He's a little bit more in sync with it. The big thing that happens is there's these anomalies that come through, and anything that moves nearby, electricity arcs into them and destroys it. And he's all like, you know, stay still, let it pass. And then there's a point later where one of those comes up and it doesn't deliberately save you, but because your enemies are moving and you're not, you're fine.
Yeah,
and so him kind of living a little bit more in harmony with the Metro is his whole shtick.
Yeah, and I feel like each of the characters you encounter are trying to give you different perspectives to kind of help color your opinion. They just failed the characterization of a lot of them.
Yeah.
But when I was there ready and willing to do the work, I had a wonderful time with it because I read the book. I read the book it's based off. I've watched the movie that Stalker takes all of its cues from. I'm kind of invested in this realm of Russian post-apocalyptic literature. I'm ready to take on these cues and have all this back knowledge. But when you just play the game, like, as you said, I think that it doesn't convey these ideas perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, the game doesn't even tell you how to clear your gas mask. How's it going to tell you what philosophical stance to take on an evil
It's thing? Such a reductive thing to say about it, but it sounds like it would be a good game if it was a good game. You know what I mean? Like, some of this stuff I'd be willing to...
look past?
Yeah, look past, put my faith in, just kind of be patient with it. Like the lukewarm characterization and the interchangeability of certain characters and the lack of fleshing out factions, like the Rangers, like who even are they and that kind of thing. That kind of stuff that isn't perfect but isn't grating, I think I would have been able to continue through it were it not for the fact that the core gameplay loop for me was just so unpalatable. And you're right, it sucks because I would have liked to have seen that ending.
Yeah.
I'm sure the ending would have been great.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's interesting how we can both play this game and by its very nature of the mechanics that you engage in and the way our brains work and how we grab on to different things and we don't, that when I played through this, I immediately was sucked into the stealth gameplay and moving through the world that way. And that kind of just shot me right through the whole experience, was just sneaking around, trying not to get noticed. And I found that to be wonderfully engrossing, especially as you get to experience a lot of the humanity, even behind the terrible people in the Metro. When you sneak around the place, you get to hear all their lines and quips and when they talk about things. And I feel like maybe this game should have been a stealth game that had shooting in it, and they didn't perfect that kind of blend. But I don't know, for me, it stands out as an interesting way of telling this, what I feel is very Russian story, that a lot of its contemporaries don't make anywhere near as palatable.
Yeah, and I also feel like that's really worth acknowledging, that this is a style of storytelling that is very popular in another part of the world, and my perspective as being someone from this part of the world who expects more character-driven stuff, more individualist stuff, more emotional engagement and drama than what this genre of literature generally provides, a big chunk of that is, like you say, on taste. It's not dismissive to say that this is about me and my comfort zone in some ways. Like, that's a very fair thing to say about a genre of literature from a particular cultural perspective that has a lot of really legitimate fears about bleak regimes and a lack of individualism and nuclear threat, you know? And while I wouldn't say that any of my reactions to the game are unreasonable, they are contextual, and I think that that's important to acknowledge.
Definitely. That's the thing when you start to get into media that's kind of created from different cultures and different backgrounds. Sometimes the tropes they use that they play with that are acceptable in one culture that aren't acceptable in another or not palatable, they don't always translate perfectly. You can't just swap letters in an alphabet. Grammar's different. The whole way of viewing things is different. And I do feel that this game comes from that kind of generation of games where you can't just put it on easy and play through the whole thing. There is still that base level of difficulty that you can't get past no matter what you do. It's still got that gating to it, which I feel was very popular in the 2010s and previously, back in that day. It's like, if you couldn't solve this puzzle, I'm sorry. There's nothing you're going to do.
You're done.
Yeah, you can't put this game on easy and then you are just invincible.
Yeah, there's also period things about it as well. Like, this came out right in the middle of the whole Gears of War, brown bleak, everything is super serious. GTA 4 would have been around this time where everything was just drab. Maybe it wouldn't have been as egregious if I played it at the time. Like, I would have been able to get into that a little bit more.
Yeah, see, that's, I feel like these games have this kind of nihilism to them. That is kind of unpalatable, especially if you are a person with fun and joy. I think the problem is the balance between the light and the darkness. Gears of War is very dark, very sepia tones almost constantly. I do feel like in Metro 2033, they understand the importance of brightening things up.
And Gears of War is almost the polar opposite of what this game is, though, isn't it? Like, yeah. Gears of War is a bleak tribe thing, but you get to be a huge dicked super soldier guy who chainsaws people in half and just gets hard-ons and bro-fists everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in this, you're not a super soldier. Yeah. Like, you're a better fighter than the average dude, but it's miraculous that you get any. Yeah.
And this is why playing it as a stealth approach fit so much for me, because I just don't imagine Artyom as the silent protagonist. He is a very weedy Eastern European man that's just screaming the whole time.
I'll put it like this. I don't think that any creative decision or design decision was wrong. Right. I think that on paper, I can see how all this works together. I can see that if a better budget was behind it and a more thorough QA process was behind it, the decisions that they made would have been implemented in a way that works better for me. And I'm not saying the game should be totally whitewashed. I understand that I actually kind of am saying that, but I don't want that to be the case. I was just more getting at the idea that if the decisions that were made were implemented in a way that was a little bit more player friendly and that kind of thing, I think I would have gotten into this quite well, because on a design level, the kinds of weaknesses that you have as a character in the gameplay style of it do work for the world that they're building. Yeah, like, I can't say they didn't think this through. It's more that their execution didn't match what I would need to engage with the game.
Yeah, I think that there has been thought and effort put into it.
Mm.
At the very least, when you look at those dream sequences and the way they implement them, but there has been a proper design team focus. And when I went from playing bloody Stalker, good lord, that game was nowhere near as clear and straightforward as this. So when you're jumping from such a low point to this, it feels like a breath of fresh air. It's still not that perfect shoot that some Western games can be, where you just get on the train and it takes you through a journey.
Mm.
I think especially with Western shooters, they're very good at getting you on board and getting you through things and engaging with that kind of gameplay. Their problems are usually in the ambience that they fail to create. It's like, oh, isn't war bad? Says every Call of Duty game, as they give you the coolest guns in the world to blow people away.
I was thinking about this recently. When they have like an FNP90 in Call of Duty, do you think that the developers pay the gun company to license the gun, or do you think the gun company pays the developers to product place the weapon?
Ooh, interesting. Well, I think it always depends on whether they use the right name or not. And actually, I don't think it matters that much, because gun companies have set themselves up as being quote-unquote cool in popular culture, so people want to talk about how cool they are, even though they're horrible, disgusting things that kill people.
Because I had that first thought a couple of months ago, and I was like, fuck me. Like, it doesn't even matter which way the money goes or if money flows at all. Yep. It's still good for the gun companies.
Yes, exactly. I think the gun industry is silent and just secretly super happy that video games have a lot of guns in them, because it gets people who probably wouldn't buy a whole bunch of firearms to do so. Mm. I think that's the nerd with guns thing is like a
trope. I'll say this, for a game that has so much violence in it, being very bleak and very nihilistic, it doesn't exactly romanticize violence.
No, and in fact, if you look at the best ending, the best way to work towards that is by not killing people who aren't trying to end your life. And even when there are some people who are, to avoid hurting them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's still a shooter, and so like any action movie still in some ways is going to promote violence. Any shooter is also going to promote violence.
What's the tool you use to solve a lot of problems? Shooting things.
Shooting things. But there is something to be said about it not being fun to shoot things.
Yeah, depending on the style of game you're creating, I feel like this is why I, and we might cut all of this, but this is why I love Splatoon so much, because it's paintball. You've removed all of the shame and guilt and worry of murdering people with guns when it's paintball.
Yeah, it's just paintball.
Yeah, but then I feel like there's another way to go, which is just as a survival thing, you're changing the context around guns. If you're going to talk about guns being fun, can't talk about them killing people. And even if you do, we all kind of have to go, yeah, but they're not, right? This is really sad. If you want to have fun with guns, you have to go ridiculous. And especially these days, I think that's just the way to go. Either by having them be paint, or just by having no one actually dying and it's just made up nonsense.
Yeah, I think there's always going to be room in gaming for actual guns that actually kill people. And I don't necessarily think that the entire genre needs to disappear. But we do need to have more intelligent conversations about it. We need to stop being fucking reactionary. It's like, no, games don't do violence. That's not a thing.
Games totally do violence.
Yeah, like you were saying before, they might might cause people to buy a firearm if they didn't buy one before. They might change the way you feel about, say, the war in Afghanistan or immigration policies based on how they depict the people that you fight, you know? Yeah, they matter. Games are art. They have an effect, and we need to be responsible how we implement that effect.
And look, I think that the people who make games are smart, intelligent people who know things.
Yeah.
And I trust that if they put themselves to it, they could contextualize firearms and their use in a way that is better for us.
Yeah, because I keep coming back to Metro 2033, obviously. There's a lot of talk about AK-47s being a desirable object because it's one of the only military firearms that's still available in the Metro. Everything else is sort of cobbled together and poorly maintained. Whereas AK-47, you know, again, I don't want to get too much into the myth of the gun here, but the AK-47 is renowned for its reliability. That's why it was produced in the first place. And so it's a military-grade weapon that's very usable in the Metro. So a lot of people want one, but it, bizarrely, it still doesn't feel that romanticized to you as the player that this thing is a cool as fuck and you're going to be fucking unstoppable when you get one. The first time you actually have the opportunity to pick one up is a massive stealth section, so the gun's useless for that whole chunk of it. The way the game relates to guns is not sexily. This game is not horny for guns, right?
Yeah. And while I do think the designs and the way the guns are shown and they look and that kind of feel of them, they are interesting designs. It's not sexy. Like, that, you're really right. There's not a point where you go, look at my giant penis murdering thing.
With a chainsaw on it.
Cut a dude in half. Yeah. Which we're going to show on Gears of War some more is pretty much what they do. A ball with guns. But anyway, I'm sorry that you had to... I don't like having to put people through an experience they don't really like.
Yeah.
But
so two things on that. Firstly, I was playing that up for comedic effect. But secondly, like, I'm actually super glad we did have this conversation about it because I feel like I appreciate it more now than I did at the start, you know, where I was still just kind of mired in my own gamer tantrum.
Yeah. And I hope you can understand why I enjoy this thing that you so struggled with and that I so fervently recommended to you.
Yeah.
And
my mood has changed from this game is fucking terrible and it's making me miserable to damn, I really wish this game was good so that I could finish it. That's where my journey has been over the last hour of recording.
Yeah. And I'd like to say that I could just recommend this game without caveats, but that is clearly not true, right? If you are a fan of shooters, then I would say play Metro 2033. If you are not a fan of shooters or you don't play that many first person ones, bribe a friend who does to play with you and you can watch them play. Bribe me to do it. Maybe I'll have to
play. Me. I'll come around. I'll do it.
Yeah, maybe we'll do something where I can just show you the majesty. But unfortunately, I feel like it does get gated by that.
Now, that, I think, is about as much as we can say about Metro 2033. Yep. If you have opinions on it, you can send those to us on Twitter at SlowpokesCast or on Facebook at facebook.com/SlowpokesPodcast. The rest of our junk you can find at our website, SlowpokesPodcast.com. But our next game is one that requires zero caveats for me to recommend. It is widely regarded to be one of the best games of all time. It technically came out long enough ago for us to be able to tackle it. John, what is our next game?
Our next game is Zelda Breath of the Wild.
The Legend of Zelda.
The Legend of Zelda. Look, come on. I was more right than I normally am.
You were like 60% right. That's, so high five on that.
I'm going to last with that. But yeah, ever since this game came out and people's reactions to it about, I think we talked about this, whereas Horizon Zero Dawn is like the triumphant last song of the Ubisoft open world style of genre. Breath of the Wild is like a new breed moving forward.
Yeah, so I got this at launch when I got my Switch. I played it very heavily. You've only just recently played it because you've only just got your own Switch.
I returned yours that I was holding hostage and I've now gotten one of my own.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited for that episode. Fair warning, I might not actually be able to appear on that episode for a number of reasons, but we have a potential guest lined up. It will still definitely happen.
Yes,
I'm very excited to hear John's thoughts on it when I sit down and edit that one.
Yes, I have a few candidates, but I'm reviewing the applicants and I will make my final decision as to who I think shall join
me. Who's going to get the rose and be able to stay on the show.
And then we'll get married and we'll have have all the little Zelda kids.
And then everyone will get really angry because 3 months later you'll break up and everyone's like, oh, it's just a sham.
Yeah.
It's a TV show. Get over it. People know it's not real. Watch it for the drama.
Yes. It'll be me. It'll be a guest. I'm sure it'll be fun and interesting and not a mess that the structure of the show is gone in David and we're just left with me, the floundering feeling person.
Well, look forward to that. I know I'm looking forward to listening to it. But other than that, I've been David.
I've been John.
Thanks for joining us for Metro 2033.